Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. The president today talking a little bit about inflation. It's the plan to move in a direction to deal with a little bit of that. Thought it was interesting. He went the only direction he really could go, talking about how the administration is going to deal with it. And you know, as I was watching his comments, as I was thinking about some of the responses, and then seeing the right-wing responses, you know, it dawned on me that there's a reason that that economists and policy people, you know, have this phrase in looking at, what presidents can do on the economy through the frame of Green Lanternism. You know, the comic book character, the Green Lantern, doesn't really have any real powers other than he's got, you know, goodwill. You know, he's got willpower. You know, he's going to try really hard. That's kind of it. There are no presidential superpowers here, especially in a world where we've had, you know, 40 years of supply side voodoo Reaganomics and neoliberal policies that have deregulated and taken the power of the federal government really out of the economy, have taken some of the controls away that maybe, you know, 60, 70 years ago were possible. Maybe you could have pulled some strings. Maybe you could have, you know, had some policy initiatives. You could have put some things in place that could have affected the economy. Now, not so much. In fact, I've said this for years, that the Business Roundtable is the most powerful entity in this country. They can pull this country to its knees simply by going, you know what, we're going to do exactly what they're doing right now. Gouge the American consumer. They can crash this economy anytime they want. So, you know, there's part of me that goes, a big part of what we're seeing is what Joe Biden's talking about helping working people. Oh, we can't have that. We're used to having all the power and control. We're used to our tax breaks and our deregulation. We're used to every policy being us-centric. So, of course, we're going to not help him in any way, shape, or form, and then make those working people squeal. Because we know the more they squeal, the more they're going to point to him, not us, to him as the problem. And then we'll point up little cute stickers, and we'll get stupid people to run and put it all over gas pumps and go, oh, look what Joe Biden did. Knowing that, you know, it's kind of like the Green Lantern with no real powers. And this is kind of where we are. Now, the president did come out and said, look, you know, we're going to try some stuff. The plan is like this. They're going to try and lower some costs. They're going to try and bring down gas prices, try to bring down prescription drug prices. They're going to try and do what they can do to bring down some costs. Of course, you're going to do that. In fact, should have been doing it all along. They're going to try and increase workers' ability to organize, to collectively bargain, to claw some of those profits that these corporations are making back into the pockets of workers. Because look, ultimately, if corporations are making more money, that means workers should be earning higher wages, right? In a real free market capitalist system, that's how it would work. If corporate America is doing better than it's done in, well, since the 1950s, shouldn't some of that, oh, I don't know, to use a Reagan-era term, trickle down? Maybe you've heard that before. You know, maybe you've heard that, hey, you know, if we give them all the money, we give them all the tax cuts, we give them all the breaks, it'll trickle down to the rest of us, and then we'll all be okay. Yeah, maybe you've heard that. Now, we know it never happens. It never trickles down. Their pockets never fill. Their plate never empties. Because they're greedy. Because they can. I mean, look at the fact that all of these companies doing the stock buybacks. I mean, this is amazing to me. And it's amazing to me that policymakers aren't losing their minds. Because again, those are the people who came to us and said, American voter, American taxpayer, we're giving all of these tax dollars to these companies and they're going to use it in the best way possible because they're the smart people. They're going to go out and they're going to build new factories. They're going to invest in new infrastructure and all of that's going to create jobs. And what they're telling us by buying their stocks back is we don't want to do any of that stuff. We don't have any use for this additional money that you've given us. We've got no productive means to spend it on. We don't want to invest in new infrastructure. We don't want to invest in new business. We don't want to invest in new buildings or certainly don't want to invest in our workers. So we're just going to invest in ourselves. We're just going to enrich ourselves. And this is where Biden should be living from now to, and Democrats should be living from now to election time. The reality is we, the working people, are getting screwed every single day. And it's the wealth class that's doing this. There is a class war going on. And we are losing badly because our wages continue to fall behind. Now, look, inflation isn't a bad thing. Little inflation isn't bad as long as your wages are keeping up. As long as your buying power is able to keep up. In fact, a little inflation for people who are in debt, you know, the working class, not a bad thing. I go back to my grandparents. My grandparents bought their home that they spent the vast majority of their life in, where they raised their family and they ultimately died in. They bought that house back in the mid-60s where, you know, the mortgage was, you know, it was like any other couple's mortgage. You had to work for it. Through the middle 70s to the end of the 70s, when the inflation period hit, it was literally a day's pay for my grandfather. Because the inflation had skyrocketed, but his wages kept up. Because their union contracts, back then they had these, lots of them, lots of workers had them. In fact, 35% of the workforce was unionized back then, and they had automatic adjustments for inflation. If the CPI went up to a certain point, wages went up. So wages didn't get eroded by inflation. In fact, the 1 year my grandfather told me he got like 3 raises in 1 year. To where at the end of all of that, their mortgage was a joke because inflation had gone up, but so had their wages. And this is the key part of what Biden is talking about. We need to get workers a raise. We need to get workers to be able to share in the wealth that their labor creates. And look, the wealth that is being created, corporate America is creating wealth. Problem is, they're hoarding it. For who? That's right, themselves. Now, he did go on and talk about reducing the deficit, which I know some people are big on. We got to reduce the deficit. And we do at some point when times are good. Absolutely, I'm in favor of that. And he is doing that. It's interesting. You know, during Democratic administrations, they're fixated on bringing down the deficit. During Republican administrations, you never hear the D word. In fact, during the Trump years, you know, I think they had it taken out of the dictionary so nobody could find it because they sure didn't care about it because Trump ran up massive deficits. But again, didn't care because we were giving it to rich people who were going to do what? Oh, they were the job creators. Yeah, that didn't work. And it never's worked. Never. The president also said today that they want to go and make corporate America pay their fair share. And this is what, again, what we should have been doing all along. You got to have a top marginal tax rate that says, you know what, those tax breaks we're giving you, you better put to good use, or we're just going to tax it back. And this is where we as citizens have to come around to a little bit of economic reality. High tax rates are a good thing on the wealthy. Oh, you didn't say that. Yeah, I did. High tax rates on the wealthy are a good thing for society because it forces them to use that wealth productively. They can't just hoard it. There's a point at which you go, how much is enough? You know, how many gazillions do you need? And if we're giving you all of this wealth that we're redistributing from the bottom to you because you're the ones who know better, you're the smart people, shouldn't we at least make sure, that they're using it? And they're using it effectively, like smart people should? Just a thought. Now, I have some rich friends that I talk to occasionally. They say the same thing. Look, if there are no penalties for me hoarding the money and making myself richer, then I'm going to do that. But if the government's going to claw it back in higher tax rates, of course I'm going to use it to expand my business. Of course I'm going to use it in more productive ways. Because entrepreneurs believe, and a lot of people believe, and I can too in certain instances, that individuals make better decisions than government can in certain circumstances. I'm not horribly opposed to the idea. It's not happening right now. Because, well, there isn't the stick that comes with the carrot. We're just giving them all carrots. Now, the president did go into his contrast with what the Republican plans are. And if you looked at Rick Scott's 11-point plan, we've talked about it. It's the right-wing wet dream of destroying everything government, sunset every government policy, you know, end Social Security, let that go belly up, shut down, you know, every government agency like the Department of Education and privatize education and all of those things. You know, tax poor and working class people because, hey, they don't pay enough already. You know, close down virtually every government agency, you know, and let the states do it, or better yet, let the rich people do it. And then we can pay them through fees for the services that we need. Also, you know, if you look at Rick Scott's plan, they want to gut the IRS so they never have to pay taxes. And again, it's this, when someone tells me there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans, I go, no, there's a huge difference, a massive difference, especially on the economic front. On the economic front, it couldn't be more stark. Now, the problem is Democrats don't have the votes in the Senate. And this is where Biden's problem is. And this was going to be Biden's problem all along. You were only going to get Manchin to go along for so much. You were going to only get Kyrsten Sinema to come along for so much. She somehow has now become the defender of corporate tax breaks and the defender of the very wealthy, which is weird to me. But there she is. So in order for us to deal with inflation, what they're going to do is they're going to slam on the brakes of the economy, which is doing well. Jobs are being created in massive numbers. Profits, massive profits are being created. They're going to slam on the brakes and raise interest rates, which is the only tool that the Fed has in its box right now. Because we won't raise taxes. Because for me, that's the way forward. Take that money from corporate America and the very wealthy who aren't using it productively right now and put it to better use. Put it to better use of lowering costs for prescription drugs and education and healthcare and all of those things to make workers' lives better. Encourage people to collectively bargain and organize for fight for better wages, hours, conditions, to claw back some of those profits as well and use them more productively. There are things we can and should be doing. Sadly, our policymakers are not going to allow that. Now, Rick Scott, his response to all of this was to claim that the president's unfit. He's unfit for office, incoherent, incapable, confused, incapacitated. Used a lot of words. He doesn't know where he is half the time. You know, he was doing a talk radio spiel. He's incapable of leading, he's incapable of carrying out his duties. Like Rick Scott would know. And here's a guy who, you know, he went on a little rant about, you know, every federal tax dollar is being spent should get a return for the taxpayer. Just common sense. I'll never stop fighting for accountability, except when he was leading a corporation that was charged with and admitted to 14 felonies related to fraudulently billing and overcharging Medicare and Medicaid. Never mind that. And he, oddly enough, didn't go to jail for it. Because the rich never do. And he walked away with, what, $300 million in golden parachute money? Which he was able to buy a Senate seat in the governor's spot. And yet this is the party that's going to take on the elites. I love that. Love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Is there something you think Joe Biden could or should be doing to help on the inflation front? There are some things, you know, policy-wise that he can do. But like I said, I think the Green Lantern frame is the right frame. There's only so much he individually can do, especially when you've got a divided Senate like we have. But if you've got thoughts, I want to hear it. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Also, remember, download the podcast if you miss any of the program, wherever you get your podcasts or at the website. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Because, look, the reality is, honestly, inflation is right now the way things are harming all of us. And it sucks. 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. This is one of those things where the Senate, you know, clearly not going to be helpful, because I think the answer for me is simple. We raise taxes on the wealthy. We take that and we help make life a little bit better for everybody else by lowering the gouging of the American consumer. Just my thoughts. Let's go to the phones. Got Julie from Minnesota listening on KTNF there, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Julie, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. Excuse me. Say, you know, I think the Democrats, and this includes the president, of course, they need to do a better job of bragging about what they've done right, a better job of marketing. You know, the Republicans are geniuses at marketing, even if there's no there, you know. And in relation to the corporations, I don't think a lot of people understand that the Supreme Court, in the last several years, 75% of the time, they have found in favor of the corporations and against the individual. You know, when all these cases come up in front of the Supreme Court. And I feel that relates also to workers, whether it's individual or, you know, basically the little guy. I just wanted to add one thing that I heard on another show, and that is a senator from Maryland was talking about some time ago, it was actually during the confirmation hearings for Coney Barrett, you know, handmade gal. And he went and said there was a $20 million donation to get her on the court. And there was a $17 million donation from who knows where, dark money, to get Kavanaugh on the court. And so, yeah, they're going against abortion and individual rights, but they have a real problem with individual Americans. And I just, you know, needed to spit that out, Rick.
No, it's important that everyone knows that and everyone talks about it. In fact, you know, to your point, where the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, not your local neighborhood Chamber of Commerce, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which I liken to almost a terrorist group at this point, the way that they've outsourced, been the pipeline to outsourcing so many jobs, and the, you know, the organization that has destroyed the middle class of this country, when they file an amicus brief or they're somehow involved in a case, Julie's right. The Supreme Court decides with them 75% of the time. This is a corporate court. First and foremost, they've always been a, this is their wheelhouse. This culture stuff, this is newish. This was always the This was not where John Roberts wanted to go. And this is where it's interesting why the leak happened, I think. Because I still think, it's my view, a certain Supreme Court justice's wife is the one who leaked this. Because they understand that Alito's opinion was going to be the most extreme. And Roberts was going to be the guy who was going to temper it a little bit and bring it back. I believe the conservatives put that out there so that that was going to be what was going to stick. We still don't know what the decision is going to be. But I still think that, because the moneyed interest, the culture war moneyed interests on the extreme, on the zealot right, have been funding this stuff for a while. The Federalist Society money, the evangelical money, the dark money that we don't know where it comes from. And thank you, Supreme Court, for making all of that so possible. Because remember, money is now speech. Just like corporations are now people. Again, court decisions, conservative decisions that have recreated, reshaped this country in ways that the majority of us do not agree with. And this is where I think the court should be, you know, an important front row political issue for voters. Now, there are going to be people who go, well, my team's winning because I bought the red hat. No, they're coming for you, too. The abortion issue may not be your issue. It's certainly not. It was never mine. But I understand that this is another step down the road towards the kind of power and control to the elitists that we working people are losing every day. The class war is being lost every day, and this is part of it. You know, you go back, and I've said this before, you go back to 2000 when Sandra Day O'Connor decided, hey, you know what, we can't count the votes because it would hurt George W. Bush. It would be injurious to him. And then you go through the taking voting rights, you know, screwing up the Voting Rights Act and making, you know, speech money and corporate America now are people. And you go the Janus thing, the defunding unions, you forced arbitration clauses for workers and consumers and limiting class action lawsuits. And you just go down the list of all of the things that this court has done to limit our ability to have a say, to have a voice, to stand up. And it's going to get worse. And look, my fear is we're moving in ways that we don't need to legislate anything. We've got six people in robes who will do that for us. And three of the nine don't matter. So for me, all of this stuff matters. And right now, the dividing thing, the thing that's hurting us right now is this inflation. Because that's what they keep throwing out. Joe Biden's bad because of inflation. And they're using this as the wedge to keep us not paying attention to the abortion issue, not paying attention to the Supreme Court. This is the Republican plan. They're sticking to this because they know families are struggling. And this is where Democrats had better do a much better job of getting out there and opening up the purse strings a little bit and making it easier for working people to get through. Just my thoughts. I got a lot to get to today, a lot to talk about. Going to take a quick break here when we come back. Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing is going to be back to share some thoughts on, you know, maybe what we should be doing, how we maybe pull some of this back, and maybe what we shouldn't be doing. A lot of people saying, oh, no, we should do this. And I'm going, no, not a great idea. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Remember, if you miss any of the program, download the podcast. Always there, always available, wherever you get your faves. Back after this.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So one of the things that I think the president, you know, talked about in dealing with inflation is, you know, the reality is you got to create good manufacturing jobs, those good high-wage jobs, those union jobs with the inflation adjustment in the contract like my grandfather's generation used to have. That's the way we take on inflation. I think this is the way forward. For me, there are things that the president can do, a lot he can't. Like I said, you know, Green Lanternism. He's got the will, he's got the wants, but doesn't have the superpowers to be able to snap his fingers like a lot of people think he can. But there are some policy aims that we can move for if we can just force Democrats to get their heads out of their blankety blank blanks and actually get some stuff done. And as the president tweeted out the other day, we're over a half a million manufacturing jobs since he took office. That's a good thing. I'm here to share some thoughts on how good that is. I've asked our good friend Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, to come share some thoughts with us. Their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it is great to be with you, and happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I've made it all the way to the speed limit. So let's get to this number, 545,000 manufacturing jobs since the president took office. That's a pretty good clip.
Yeah, in a pretty short amount of time, that's a faster clip than we've seen for 40 years or so. And the thing that I think must be frustrating to some detractors of Joe Biden is that, you know, they want to beat him up on a lot of things, but he has taken back this issue that Donald Trump kind of used to drive a wedge into blue collar politics. And he's done it effectively. And if you just in terms of those jobs, let's remember a couple of things. They probably pay about 20% better on average than a comparable job in the service sector for someone who doesn't have a 4-year college degree. So that's better wages, right? And then I think the other thing about this that is very important is that there is still room to grow. In the latest what they call JOLTS report, job openings, layoffs, and turnover, there were over 800,000 open manufacturing jobs around the country. 800,000, and so and Rick, I know. You know this from, where you were raised and where you are today, that there were many, many, many years where there was no one hiring in manufacturing. You know, it was all layoffs. It was attrition. It was plants closing down either temporarily or permanently. It was shifts being taken away. And that was a lot of wages lost and a lot of jobs lost and not a lot of people being hired, right? I mean, there's a big gap between folks that are kind of Gen Xers and boomers like us. And then, and then when you look at the plant, not a lot of folks who are, who are a little younger than us. And now there's this hiring boom. And it basically skipped a generation. So this is truly remarkable. And the thing that makes it more remarkable, no one believed this was possible. I mean, I don't think people believe Biden was the guy to do it. And I think that there were a lot of economists who thought, well, manufacturing is just not going to come back. I mean, if it does, it's going to be all robots. There's going to be no jobs.
No.
So I think this shows that, manufacturing can come back and it can come back with well-paying jobs. And yeah, there's going to be robots and there's going to be automation. There's going to be challenges. But if we put our minds to it and we have a growing economy and we have the right policies, we can get some amazing things done.
No, and for me, it comes back to the policy. And this is where I give Biden credit. I generally don't give the president credit for the economy doing really well or really badly because there's only so much they can do. But on this front, he has been out in front of saying we've got to be leading and bringing manufacturing back and using, coming out of the pandemic, using what levers he can to encourage manufacturing and, out of the infrastructure bill and out of the rescue plan, investing a little money in bringing manufacturing back, which we have to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, this is not accidental. I mean, some of it obviously was the fact that we were coming out of the trough of the pandemic induced kind of recession and temporary layoffs that we saw, but that doesn't explain all of it. That doesn't nearly explain all of it. And what explains more of it is the fact that we do have a growing economy, and we also now have a situation where manufacturers can make significant capital investments in the United States and know that those jobs can stay here, because there's a different attitude about trade policy than there had been in the past. There's this investment in our infrastructure, $1.2 trillion. And some of this is going to get to the manufacturing sector, which is going to supply all of this, from the steel to the fiber optic cable for the broadband to the forged iron for the waterworks and the building material for a lot of the other construction that's going to take place. I mean, this is going to come from American factories. So it is a and we haven't even gotten into clean energy yet and kind of what the auto companies are doing. But I think that if you have a policy that says we want to make it here, the jobs will follow. They will follow if the economy's growing.
Yeah, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Scott Paul. He is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. You know, yesterday I got an email from Joe listening on WIO 97.9, 107.3 in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. He writes, if inflation is Sleepy Joe's biggest problem, wouldn't it make sense to dump the tariffs and allow Chinese goods back into the U.S. to ease our supply chain issues? If we can get cheaper stuff in this moment of need, what's taking so long and why aren't we doing it as soon as possible? You know, this seems to be the frame, and I've gotten a bunch of responses from people like this. And look, on the right and the left, because these are Trump's tariffs, which, again, I took a beating for supporting back during those years. I think they're not great, but they're what we could get. What about this? I mean, would this help ease inflation? And if it could, how come it hasn't been done already? And on the other side, and I know this is a multi-part question, would it then harm the kind of manufacturing job growth that we've just been talking about? And in the long run, would it actually be worse for us?
Yeah. All good questions. And so fundamentally, cutting the tariffs sounds like it would help with inflation, right? Because if you have what amounts to 25% tax on a good coming to the United States, you're like, well, that's gotta make some difference. The fact is, the way that these tariffs are designed and the products they cover and corporate behavior, it's doubtful that any of the savings at all would reach the consumer. So first of all, There are not 25% tariffs on every product coming from China. They're basically on products that are in the supply chain, okay, that are in intermediate goods that the consumer doesn't buy directly necessarily, for the most part. So that's number one. Number two, many manufacturers have already figured a way around this. Either they found another supplier elsewhere in Asia, or they brought some back, or they've made a deal with their supplier in China to cut their costs somewhat. And what has happened here, for the most part, is that there's been profit taking by the retailers here. And they've said, you know, we have all these tariffs, and they've passed on the cost to customers. Do you believe that any of these folks, that any of these big multinational companies are going to pass the savings on to consumers if they got a tariff cut?
Of course not.
I know. That's not the way they behave. And even the most wildly free trade think tank in the United States, the Peterson Institute for International Economics, you know, it does studies all the time about how great trade agreements are going to be. And by the way, they've been wrong on every single one of these. But they did a study and said, you know what, if we cut all these tariffs out, we might be able to reduce inflation. Their lower band was 0.3%. Their upper band was 1.3%. And Rick, I'm telling you, they have been, you know, if Rosie's scenario had a picture next to it in the dictionary, the Peterson Institute would be right there. Because they, and even Catherine Tai recognized this. And when she was asked about this study, she said it's somewhere between fiction and an interesting intellectual exercise. That's how she characterized it. And she's, you know, she is a bright, bright trade representative. And so it's like there wouldn't be a benefit. I mean, it's seductive because it sounds like there would be, but there wouldn't be. And the worst part about this, Rick, is that we would lose the one point of leverage that we have with China against unfair trade practices that we put into place. And China isn't getting better on any of these. In fact, it's getting worse. Yep. It's getting worse. And so we got to keep the pressure on, and we have to make sure that the big global companies know that there's going to be a cost if they source from China, that they need to find other sources or they need to bring the stuff back to the United States. But this is not a way to help with inflation. And just my last point, and this is kind of a technical one. If you actually did lower the tariffs, there'd be a buying spree by all these suppliers for this stuff. That would raise the cost of it. If you are increasing demand for it, but you're not going to increase the supply necessarily, that's going to raise the cost. So at the end of the day, it ain't going to help.
Right.
It's not going to help at all.
They're still going through their COVID problems as well. And could they produce? I mean, again, this, I keep coming back to, our supply chain problems are a main driver of the inflation, along with we're getting our eyes gouged out. America is telling us they're gouging us. Which is for me why we need to tax them. This is why we need a windfall profit tax in this moment more than ever that I've ever been a part of. This is that moment where we go after them. And I look at energy prices. Energy prices are completely out of bounds in this moment. And this is an opportunity for me, Scott, and for all of us. Yeah. This should be the moment where we mobilize and go, why are we dependent on foreign oil? Now, I've got my friends here going, no, that's why we need to drill, baby, drill here. We are drilling here. There are more leases out than there have ever been. They're still not drilling. And they're telling us they're not drilling. They've said, we like the price where it is. We're not increasing production because we want to make our money back. This is where we should be getting off the oil. We should be coming much more independent. We should be full bore on putting solar panels on every single building. In fact, I saw a Walmart ad saying that they're going to be the leader in clean energy by putting solar panels on their roofs of their buildings. I'm going, well, that's only 25 years too late, but better late than never, I guess. But I hope those are American-made solar panels and not Chinese ones.
Yeah. And the odds are, unfortunately, they may be Chinese solar panels because of the state of the industry. But Rick, you're correct about this. And I cannot remember the source of this, but I saw a good study that indicated that you can explain about half of price inflation because of profit taking by these big companies, where they're saying that they're getting squeezed and they're passing it along to consumers. The reality is that all of these companies have a great deal of leverage, and they've found ways to squeeze their suppliers. They really have. And so the idea that that they are helpless children in all of this is also a fallacy. Look, there's only, I think it's fair to point out, and you said this, there's only certain things that Biden can control here. He can't control what Putin does. He can't necessarily control what OPEC does. He can't control the weather or what's happening with COVID in China. But to the extent that there are policy levers that they can control, I think that they're doing a reasonably good job, and it is a different kind of supply side economics. It is the kind of supply side economics that says we need to increase production in the United States of America. And that means more jobs, that will be more supply. And with the laws of supply and demand, that means the prices should come down because there'll be more competition, there'll be more product. And so I like the approach, and it may take us a little bit of time to see a measurable impact in inflation. But the stuff with, the crazy stuff with the shipping and the COVID and the fuel cost, that could change at any moment. And it should. It should. That should change fast. But you're right. These companies want to take profits, and so they're reluctant to shift back into the gear that we ought to be in.
I love that you give them credit by going, they're reluctant. No, they're not reluctant. They're greedy. Call them what they are. Last question I've got for you. Yesterday, the president talked about internet access across the country and low-income folks getting subsidies, and actually, a lot of people getting it for free, which I am absolutely 100% in favor of. We did rural electrification. I can't think of a cute phrase for internetification. I wish we could. I need some think tank to focus group this for me to come up with that little buzzword. But I love the fact that we're talking about finally investing and making sure that in every corner of this country we get good quality, high speed internet. And that's coming out of the infrastructure bill. Again, my problem is I want to make sure that it's, you know, it's American made technology. I want to make sure that it's American workers and union workers doing that work. Thoughts?
That's right. How about high speed rural routers? That's the best I got to put a name to it. But this is there is a requirement in the Build Back Better legislation that says the materials that are going into this have to be made in America. There's a Buy America requirement. The agencies are working through all of this now because they've never had to do this before for broadband. Okay. And so we're working with allies in Congress and with others to make sure that fiber optic cable, by the way, a lot of it is made by steelworkers in the state of North Carolina for Corning. But we're working to make sure that there is such a requirement so that we can get the manufacturing benefits of this, as well as the kinds of economic and information benefits and educational benefits that will accrue to the areas that so desperately need this as well, Rick.
Yeah, this is how we fight inflation. This is the part of it. We build our infrastructure, we invest in our country, and we create good family-sustaining wage jobs that keep up with inflation so that we can support our families, pay our bills, do all that stuff. And, oh, by the way, invest in the future and get off the dirty stuff all along the way. Sounds like a win-win proposition. If only we didn't have an entire political party standing against all of that. But Scott, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff.
You bet, Rick. Keep up the great work. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Our good friend Scott Paul. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Quick break, right back after this. 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Want to hear your thoughts. Also, remember, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss a moment of the program. Subscribe, share, comment, all of that stuff. Back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1980. That was the day that as many as 90,000 people rallied for the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment in Grant Park in Chicago, Illinois. The proposed amendment to the Constitution read, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." The idea to amend the Constitution to ensure equal rights for women was first proposed by Alice Paul in 1923. In the late 1960s, with the second wave feminist movement, the push for the amendment gained momentum. At the time, women only made 59 cents for each dollar earned by men. Not all labor leaders supported the Equal Rights Amendment. Some worried that the proposed constitutional amendment would nullify existing labor protections for women in the workforce. They instead advocated for legislation around specific issues faced by women. Myra K. Wolfgang, a vice president of the Hotel and Restaurant Employees and Bartenders International Union, testified against the ERA before the Senate in 1970. The ERA passed Congress in 1972, but in order for the amendment to go into effect, 38 states had to ratify it. 30 quickly did so, but then a backlash against the legislation began to gain momentum. Illinois was the only northern state that was a holdout for ratifying the amendment. A massive rally was planned. That morning, the Chicago Tribune described the crowd that was expected, including representatives from labor, religion, show business, politics, and the home. Despite this massive turnout, the Equal Rights Amendment failed to win enough support in Illinois. The amendment fell three states short of becoming the law of the land. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, according to CBS News, gas prices hit an all-time new record high, $4.37 a gallon nationwide average, and higher in my neighborhood than that. And this is, you know, every time I go, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm sure glad I could be making the CEOs a little bit more money. Sure happy I could make the shareholders a little bit wealthier. Because, again, if you go back and you listen to what they said in their earnings calls, they all said the same things. We're not producing anymore. Now understand, you know, the right wing's going, yo, Joe Biden shut off the Keystone XL pipeline, which, and the memes come out, we could have gotten 800,000 barrels a day. No, none of that oil was coming here. None of it. We were getting none of it. None of that dirty tar sands oil was going to be refined in this country. It was simply being shipped right through the middle and right out the port somewhere else to be refined somewhere else, because we don't refine that dirty stuff here. And this is where, you know, just, I don't know, maybe just a little thought process would be helpful. But, you know, hey, it's oil. We were going to get 800,000 barrels of it. It's going to be amazing. But Joe Biden ruined it all. And when you hear a steady drumbeat of that, and that's all you're getting, you know, they're, you know, Joe Biden, you know, cut off all the oil, even though he has given more leases than actually Trump gave out. They're just sitting on them. They're holding them up. They're holding them. Why? Because they can. Because we're addicted to oil. Because we don't have a choice. Most of us don't have a choice. Most of us live in areas where the only way to work is getting in the car and driving there, which is why this comes back to what I've been saying for decades. We need solid, reasonable public transit. We need alternatives to getting us to and from work. It's that simple. But, you know, are we gonna get there? I don't know. And that's where the problem is. And until we do some of that, I'm not sure. Let's quick get Alice on line one. Alice, what's going on?
Not much. All I wanted to say was, I have never seen people who are so ignorant of how things operate. And it's no wonder, because they listen to right-wing media and they read what? The right-wing media. And they have no clue. And I'm just tired of hearing everything is Joe Biden's fault when it's not. But there you are.
There you go. Appreciate it, Alice.
Have a good one.
Great stuff. No, this is the sad reality. It's because it's what we're spoon-fed. It's what's being, you know, the outrage candy. Oh, that's Joe Biden's fault. And people buy it because we need someone to blame. Because we don't see the CEOs. We don't see the lavish lifestyles they lead at our expense. We just know that we're ticked. And look, I'm as angry as anybody. Which is why our Senate, and, you know, we should be angry at the right people. And the right people are sitting in our Senate. Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, the folks who will not tax these corporations. The people who will not go after them and hit them with a windfall profits tax. The people who will not go after them and hold them accountable. We need to, in this moment, use those levers. Again, this is why Republicans want to destroy government. Because government's the only one that's going to be able to hold corporate America accountable, and they know that. Weak, small, ineffective government is what they want. I don't want big, small. I want effective. When we need something done, it needs to get done. This needs to get done. We need to be investigating these companies because, again, we've got antitrust laws on the books. I keep saying we need to start breaking some of these big companies up. These big conglomerates, these almost monopolies, we need to start busting some of these up. Where's our Teddy Roosevelt? Where's today's TR? Bring competition back to the quote-unquote free market. Because it doesn't seem like a lot of collusion going on. Just my thoughts. Love to hear yours. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. For those who only pick up the first hour, make sure you check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. For hour number two, you can grab that podcast wherever you get yours. For everyone else, stick around hour two after this.